Then what's
happened? Okay, so the last three times we talked about what happens when you've got two halachos. Are they the same or are they separate? So for example, Hidur Mitzvah. Is it part of the mitzvah of lulav and tefillin and sefer Torah, or it's separate? Is it that I have a mitzvah to take sefer Torah, a mitzvah to put on tefillin, a mitzvah to eat matzah? And by the way, I have another mitzvah while I'm doing mitzvahs to do it in a nice way. Not to disrespect Hashem by doing it in a minimal way. But essentially doing two mitzvahs. One is putting on tefillin. Two is, I'm sure I understand how much I love him by bringing beauty and aesthetics and joy and hidur mitzvah. Or hidur mitzvah is part of the mitzvah. That when you do it in a nice way, it's just a different type of mitzvah. It's a higher grade of mitzvah. So for example, according to your one sheet in the Gemara on Shabbos, you could be machal al Shabbos by doing a bris milah, by cutting off pieces of skin that aren't necessary for the mitzvah, but are necessary for the hidur. So you've already done milah. What gives you the right to cut more skin, which is an Isra Shabbos, you're not allowed to cut skin on Shabbos, just to do Hidur Mitzvah? The answer is, Hidur Mitzvah is not a separate mitzvah, because if so, it wouldn't be Dach HaShabbos. Hidur Mitzvah means you're doing a higher meal. A higher milah, you can do it on Shabbos, even if it's at the cost of Chil Shabbos. And that was a famous question of the Beis Halevi, who was, remember again, the Beis Halevi was the father of Reb Chaim, who was the father of Reb Moshe, and Reb Belbel, who was the father of the Rav, who was the father-in-law of Reb Lichtenstein, who was my Rebbe. So that's how your Masara goes back to the Beis Halevi. What happens if you're in town? I just gave a shiur. In the Gush, we have a kolel from Mechanchim that comes and meets once a week. So I just gave a shiur yesterday about a lulav hayavish. The first mission, the third part, says a lulav hayavish is puzzle. Okay, well, you heard this before? Mm-hmm. Who gave shiur on it?
This morning you were so listening
to it. There's another yavish. So you're talking about the different shiurim of lulav hayavish? No.
Well, so we can go into detail.
So essentially, the Gemara doesn't say how do you define a lulav hayavish. It doesn't say what dry is. So the shittas range all the way from very, very quick disqualifications, which is the shittas arrive at if it loses its color, and it goes from green to white, which is a little yavesh, and it's possible, it's after 3-4 months. And on the other end of the spectrum is tosas. And tosas paskins that until it crumbles in your fingers, which is not 3-4 months, but 300 years, it's kosher. And people are somech, the Ramah quotes tosas, and people b'shas echad. My Zaidi, who was a rev in Europe, told me that in Europe, he used to be samech on this Ramah, because a lot of people in European, Russian, frozen towns, they couldn't find tropical dalet meter. You have any friends whose last name is Etrog or Citron?
They were in charge
in the city of getting the Etrog for the town. The family became known as the Etrog family, the Citron family. So luckily, they got an Etrog, but Lula was very hard to find. It was bigger, it was harder to transport. So my Zaidi told me that one year, they just didn't get the Lula. So your Paskin used last year's Lula. And this was not my Zaidi. I mean, you can look in, I talked to my Beinu Tam yesterday, but if you talked about Beinu Tam in the early share, this was the 11th century. He was using last year's lulav. So people really did use last year's lulav. One of my favorite Rav Schechter stories, because today, you could walk with a blindfold on into any place that sells Dalet Minim and play pin the tail on the donkey and just pick up Dalet, my son is a big Dalet Minim seller, just pick up Dalet Minim and it would be 30 times better than anything your grandparents had, by far. Because we have access to markets and we're in Israel. So what do people do? Why do they spend so much time picking up dalet minim? It's done bittul Torah. Nothing to do with their time. It's holy bittul Torah. But like it's, so the story goes, I'll tell you two stories. Once the Rav was walking out of shul in Boston. And as he was walking down the stairs of the shul, the Esther basically fell out of his hand, down three flights of stairs, rolled down to the street, a piano fell on it, a dump truck drove over it, lightning struck it. Like whatever you can imagine happened to this poor little Esther. And the Rav in his accent said, I want to see that Eslug. So they said, why are you seeing that? Eslug? I've never seen Apostle Eslug. That was the first time he was going to see Apostle Eslug because everything in our day is so kosher. But even cooler story with Rav Schechter, I don't know if he remembers it, but evidently Rav Schechter once went to, in America they don't sell dalet minim on tables, they sell them in the svarim stores, in the local stores. So he went to a svarim store to buy the dalet minim. And the owner of the store said, oh my goodness, Rav Schechter's coming. He told his assistant, Jose, show him some terrible stuff just to stall him. I'll go on the back. I'll find the nicest dalet minim, and I'll bring it out to him. And then give him 5-10 minutes. Just show him direct. Show him terrible stuff. So Jose showed him something. He said, okay, I'll take it. And he walked in. So he doesn't waste his time picking dalet minim. Okay, I'll take it. So away he goes. He took it. I gave him the worst thing we had. And he grabbed it. So the Beis Halevi wanted to know if, let's say, at 11 o'clock you take the one lulav in town that went from hand to hand. In fact, there's actually tshuvos. What happens if the estrog, because the estrog has to be yellow, not green, What if the Esrog loses its yellow, but not botanically, because it's been touched by 400 people in town? You pass the Esrog around from one person to another. So if you were number 327, the Esrog wasn't so shiny anymore, wasn't so bright. It was abused by people's fingertips in Greece. And remember, you know, you guys were a lot cleaner than they were also. I'll come clean, okay? I tie my shoes, and I don't wash my hands. Because the Shulchan Aruch says you should wash your hands after you tie your shoes. So some people say Api Kabbalah. So if you're a Mekubal, you should wash your hands. I'm not a
Mekubal.
No, because I'm not a Mekubal. I'm not disparaging Kabbalah. I'm just saying I don't follow Kabbalah. I don't pick and choose my Kabbalah. And the other reason, generally, things in Api Kabbalah that according to the Shulchan Aruch have also additional Kabbalistic, non-Kabbalistic. The other reason is their shoes were full. You know what their shoes look like? Soot and dirt and grime and, you know, like dogs. I mean, they lived in terror. My shoes are probably cleaner than their, you know, I don't know, than their Yom Kippur tie or something, which is pretty clean. I mean, you don't wear shoes with dirt on them. So if I have to tie my shoes, I don't potentially tie my shoes during davening. But if I have to tie my shoes during davening because I want my, come on, if I want to tie my shoes during davening because I want, sorry, you didn't miss much. I want to tie my shoes during davening just to make it look a little nicer, I'll tie my shoes. Okay, come. You'll be all right. Come on, sit down. You'll be in the army soon, okay? You're not going to be able to say it's too cold, okay? Okay, come on, stop complaining. Okay, so that was the base of Levi's question. The lulav comes at 11, you're Mekayim at 11, so you already did your mitzvah, and then at 12 o'clock a nicer lulav showed up. So can you take lulav again with the bracha to be Mekayim Hidra mitzvah? Well, if Hidra mitzvah is part of the mitzvah, okay, now I'm doing a higher grade of lulav. If Hidra mitzvah is just a way to do, I'm sorry, the opposite way. If Hidra mitzvah is separate, so I did my lulav at 11 o'clock, now I'm showing Hashem how much I love him by taking a nicer lulav. If Hidra mitzvah is integrated, then I really did my mitzvah. I'm no longer tied to lulav that day, so I can't do Hidra mitzvah without the actual base mitzvah. So that's what we talked about, and we talked about Pshara, if you remember, whether Pshara is part of Beis Din's authority, or Pshara making a compromise is outside of Beis Din. And we talked about Habal Aram Miskanayim Pogimbo, the fact that Pinchas can take a spear and hit Zimri with a spear, is that he's a Shliach Beis Din, or he's not a Shliach Beis Din, it's separate. So we spent 3 shiurim trying to talk about when you have 2 items in Halacha. This is all over Shas. Are they integrated, or are they separate? Are they internal, are they 2, or are they 1? Now we're going to talk about a whole different model, a whole different issue that comes up in Shas. When you do have 2 elements, and they are separate, they're not integrated, are they both fundamental, or one is just a secondary enabler, just helps the first? That's known in Halacha as Iker and Tafel, or Iker and Iker. You say they're both Ikers, they both accomplish separate items, or one is the Iker, one is the Tafel. So for example, not tonight's shiur. In order for me to transfer ownership of this eraser to Yaakov, 2 things have to happen. One is there needs to be a Maisa Kinyan. Who remembers the Maisa Kinyan on something very small? Hagba, pick it up. In addition, there has to be Das. Both parties have to want to do it. If he doesn't want to do it, well, let's say, I don't want to do it, he takes it for me. You know what we call someone who makes a Maisa Kinyan without Das? What do we call that person? We call him a Ganav. So there has to be agreement. We call that Gemiras Das. So, here we have 2 elements. Are they both Ikars? You need 2 elements to create a transfer of ownership. Or we say, one option is, the Ikar is, come on, help me out, the Ikar part that transfers ownership is the Maisa, the physical. And what's the Das? The Das just, well, it shows that there's no Geneva here. But essentially, what affects the Kenyan is the Maisa. The Das is just to make sure. Or the opposite. Maybe what really does the Kenyan is Das, the common agreement. But the role of the Maisa is, what would you say the role of the Maisa is? It's a secondary role. It's a
physical representation.
Right, to show that they're agreeing. How do I know what you're thinking? How do you know what I'm thinking? Even if we each agree, we have to make it more concrete. We can't just say we're thinking. Halacha doesn't work in telekinesis. So it's basically you and me are showing an agreement. And that's the power of chalipin. Because chalipin, when you pick up something, you're not really showing anything about the item. You're not picking it, pulling, lifting. You're just showing a handshake that we're agreeing. That's what makes chalipin so powerful. So that's something that comes up a lot in Shas. When you have, once you've reached a decision that they're 2 separate items, sometimes you have to ask, is it 1 or 2? But after you know that they're 2, are they 2 co-equals? Or 1 is the Iker, and 1 is the Tafel. And I just use my Sekinyan to show you that way of thinking. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to ask this question, but not in the world of Kinyan, but in the world of Kiddush. Anyone know how the first Mishnah of Kiddush begins? Aisha Niknes? Kesef, shtar, and bia. Now the Mishnah makes no mention of the other element. It has to be one action. The action could be money. The action could be marital relations. The action could be a contract, a shtar. The Gemara says, now let's look at our source sheet. Everyone have a source sheet? The Gemara says, Tara Rabbanan. And by the way, you'll have this very often in Gemara, where a Braisa will elaborate upon something the Mishnah didn't say. Okay, remind me again. Who codified the Mishnah? Who sat down and took 400, 300 years of Tanaitic statements and put them all together and filled them? Then I see. Around what year did he do this? The end of the second century. Why is that important? Because the beginning of the second century was one of the most difficult periods in Jewish history. That was Rabbi Akiva. Remember, the Aser HaRugei Malchus. Sunday is Shavasar. If you haven't noticed the hair, right? All the haircuts. So we're going to talk about the Aser HaRugei Malchut in 3 weeks. It happened in two stages. More or less the first wave, the older ones, happened in 70 AD, 70 CE, Shnat HaShivim. That was when the Beis HaMikdash was burnt. What happened in 132 AD, 60 years later? The Bar Kokhba rebellion was crushed. And there were still a lot of wars that took place during those 60 years. And that was Rabbi Akiva, who was the board of Bar Kokhba. Most of the Aser HaRugei Malchut were later. A couple of them were earlier. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, those are the earlier ones, Rabbi Shimon. But the later ones, Rabbi Akiva, Blazer Ben Shemua, those are the later ones. Okay? So it was a difficult time. You didn't have the peace of mind to sit there and start collecting information. Codification of Shas, codification of Mishnah, takes time and resources and sitting around a table and gathering information. They were living in caves. They were being killed. They were being persecuted. What happened is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. Rabbi Akiva had 22,000 Talmidim who died in the famous, terrible Magifah during Omer. And then afterwards, he could have said, okay, I'm throwing in the towel. I tried. I failed. And then I'm going to get a second shot. I'm not going to give up. As an old man, which is amazing to think about. And he taught five famous Tanaim who changed the world. One was Rabbi Meir. One was Rabbi Yossi. One is Rabbi Huda. One was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. One was Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, who was also killed by Kiddush Hashem. And Rabbi Meir makes up most of the Mishnah, because Rabbi Meir was a great teacher. And he said the same thing that other people were saying, but in very abbreviated form, very clear, very concise. So when Rabbi Yudanasi quoted people, he said, yeah, I'm going to take most of what Rabbi Meir said, because he had a good way of speaking. And it's easier for me to quote him rather than someone else who said the same thing, but more verbose and more lengthy, which is why whenever he quotes Rabbi Meir, he doesn't have to tag him, because it's the default. Oh, whenever there's a Mishnah, I'm not quoting Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, which is why we say Stam Maznisan, Rabbi Meir. Whenever there's a Mishnah, Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi took most from Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi was a Talmud of Rabbi Meir. So here's a Talmud of Rabbi Kiva's Talmudim. Like, let's say, you're a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein's Talmudim, right? You didn't get to meet Rav Lichtenstein, but you learned Torah from me, so you're a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein. I'm a Talmud primarily of the Rav Talmudim. I learned a little bit in the Rav Shir, but not long enough to really, really soak him in. Who is my Rabbi? Rav Lichtenstein, and to the Rav Shechter, and Rav Kahn, and other people who learn in the Rav Shir. So you're a Talmud. That's the difference between a Gadol and a regular person. A regular person has Talmudim. A Gadol is so impactful that he casts his impact upon two generations or three generations. So we say in davening, Talmidehem, Talmidei, Talmidehem. Choma Kamas Moshe Seim, Ben Amar Amei. So someone like that, I don't expect that I'm all of a sudden get an impact, right? I taught your father, I'm okay to teach you, but I don't know that all of a sudden, if you become a Rebbe one day, that all of a sudden you're going to be quoting me. I'll impact Talmidim, and then you'll get your own ideas, and then you'll move on and affect those Talmidim. So Gedolim, they impact generations. Rabbanim, they just impact the people they come into contact with secondarily. Okay? So, the Braisa was not codified by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He left out a lot of things in the Braisa. Who took over from him? Who started to codify the Braisa? Is Talmud, anyone know?
Ashi.
No, Rav Ashi was the last Amara. That's 450. He did the Gemara. Correct. Rav Ashi and Ravina. Who did the Braisas? Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia took all the... I'm sorry, not the Braisas. I apologize. My mistake. He made Tosefta. He collected all the statements that Yehuda HaNasi did not put into his book. He made another book called the Tosefta.
So he was sitting on the side and he was just taking all the scraps? Like
he was helping Rebbe. He was Rebbe's Talmud. So exactly, I imagine that what happened when Rebbe died is that he said, we have to collect some more of these authoritative states. So he put together the Tosefta, him and Rebbe Oshia. And then whatever wasn't put together, that just became, what we would call an external outside statement. What do you call in Hebrew external?
Like
Brita. Bar is outside, Gav is inside. Gimel Vav.
Aramaic.
What?
Aramaic.
Aramaic means Brita. Levar means outside. So make sure when you're learning Gemara language, Bar is outside. You've got all these statements in the Brisas. Now they're important, but Rishon Zel, I don't hold to that Brisa. Rishon can't say I don't hold to the Mishnah, I don't hold to the Tosefta, although you can in the Tosefta. So here we have a Brisa that complements the Mishnah. And just to see what's happening. The famous Mishnah Kiddushin, it's so famous, I need to quote it. Everyone in the world knows that. Isha nicknames for Shosha Drachen. Maybe not Jay Sims. Isha nicknames for Shosha Drachen, your first day of Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. I like the Viral Jays. I know by Epstein is Big Tamil Chacham. You're arresting Isha next year?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a Big Tamil Chacham. Baruch Hashem. Okay. Kesef B'Kesef. Nasan La Kesef, the Brisa says. Oshav B'Kesef, which the Mishnah has. The Amar La. Hare'at mikudeshet le. Aha. You don't just need kesef shtar and bia. You don't just need a maisa. What else do you need? Amira. Here we go. All of a sudden we've got two. And it's clear that the two isn't one. The two is two. Right? It's not like it's one integrated. Now it's two. Now we want to know, are they two separate activities? One is a physical activity. One is a verbal activity. Or somehow the amira is not a separate element. Come on, help me out. The amira just... Why is it part of Nesina? Because without the Amira,
then the Netina isn't.
Because, okay.
You don't understand what's happening.
You don't know what their thoughts
are. There's no context.
Right. Well, say it even sharper, you don't know what they're thinking. So, what really does the Kiddushin is the money, the shtar, the bia. But we have to know they want it. Remember, unlike Gerushin, which is unilateral, one sided, Kiddushin is bilateral. It has to be an agreement. So, how do I know if he wants it? How do I know if she wants it? So, how do you normally communicate common interests? You talk. You talk to someone. And he says, they're at Mikudesh. If she says, no, I hate you, then that's it. We close up shop. But if she's quiet and she takes the money, presumably she knows she's getting married. Presumably she wants to get married. And therefore she is married. So one option is the Amira. It's not a separate activity. The Amira just shows intent, consent, agreement, willingness, fill in the blanks. We'd call that in Halacha, Giloy Das. Amira.
It would be
make, but you can replace it. You need something to replace it. There are other ways to show intent. Very good. Or the other approach is to say the Amira isn't a supplementary, complementary helper of the Maisa Kiddushin, the Maisa Kesef, the Maisa Bia. Amira is a?
Is it part of it?
Its own separate trigger. To marry a woman, you have to do two things. What are the two things you have to do? Maisa, Nisikasef, Sharon Bia, and Amir. Now the Amir shows us that they agree, and what really does it is the Nesina, Kesef, Sharon Bia. You need to do two things. You need to do a Maisa Kiddushin, and you also need to do a Maisa Amir. Now see if I can push you a little bit. Why would Kiddushin, as opposed to Kinyan, hold on a second, Amir, why would Kiddushin need two? If the first way is Kiddushin only needs one, then the Amir is setting the context. Why would you say, unlike Kinyan, Kiddushin needs two separate halachic activities? One is a Maisa Kesef Shtar and Bia, one is a Maisa Amir. What would you say? Because marriage is not... If there are two triggers, then there are two.
Two
facets to the halacha that I'm creating. When I'm transferring an object, I'm transferring the ownership, the financial ownership. When I'm marrying a woman, what am I doing? On the one hand, I am... acquiring her, so there's an acquisition, but I'm not just acquiring her, what else am I doing? It's not like a cow or what's happening? Things that can't be broken down into money issues. Well, before the applications, most of them are derabanan, but what am I doing there? So what happens to a woman after the kiddushin? What happens to a woman who's kiddushin? That's me derabanan. She's awesome. I'm making her awesome. And I'm making her mutter to me. There's a whole world of isurin and heterin that I'm imposing on the woman. On the one hand, it's a little bit like a phone or an animal or a person. On the other animal, so that's why there are two words. For one, what's the Torah's word for what we call Kiddushin? Ki.
Kicha.
Kicha, which sounds like it's mula, money. What a chazal, and this doesn't come in the Torah. How do we call it? We call it Kiddushin, like Kiddush. So there are two features. You see how I'm unlocking all the Masech's Kiddushin? Now, any halacha you want to learn, you want to know, well, where does it come from? Is it the ownership element? Like, for example, the fact that a woman, we just learned Yevamos, a woman who marries a kohen can eat truma, even though she's not a kohen. Does that come from the fact that she's owned by the husband, whatever ownership will be, was literally like a cow, but she's a monetary element, like an eved, right? An eved of a kohen can eat truma. So a woman of a kohen can eat truma because she's part of the ownership item, kinyan pasuk. Or this is separate halacha, she is besa, she is his house, she is his wife. The fact that she eats truma is different. And that will all of a sudden affect hundreds of halachas. When can she eat truma? If she gets divorced, if he has a child, if there is a yibum, if it is truma, there is the ban. So every time I look at a halacha of kiddushin, I want to know, does it come from the mamon? Does it come from the ishus? And that all comes from the first statement in the second kiddushin. Do you need two triggers? Or there's basically one trigger, and the emir just shows intent, because without intent, the trigger is going to collapse. Okay? Or in the language I introduced before, there were two ikars. There's a maisa, which is the ikar, and there's an amir, which is the ikar. Or the ikar is the maisa, keser, shner, and bia. The tafel, secondary, the support, is the amir, which creates das. Yes, Harry.
If you need maisa, amira, and maisa, keser, shner, bia, why did the Mishnah only say keser?
Great question. That's a good question. That's what a lot of people ask. Why is it omitted from the Mishnah? That would indicate that you don't need to, at least in the Mishnah. And it's just there, like in the background. It's assumed, it's implicit. But the Braisa has it. Okay. So, the Braisa continues. Okay? Let's see the Braisa. Avalhisha Nasna, line number 2, if she gives the money. Viamrahi, and she does the Amira. Okay, Kiddushin has to be the man, Kiika, right? It can't be the woman. And the Braisa repeats, I'm giving you a summary of the Braisa. Last second to last line. Nasan huva amrahu, if he gives the money and he says, Mikudashas. Nasnahi va amrahi, if she gives the money and she speaks, ain't Mikudashas. That's obvious. He has to be the driver. What about Nasan hu the amrahi?
This would apply
slow down.
Not necessarily.
What? No. Slow down. Very good, yes. What if he gives the money and she does the amrahi? Where says, I don't know. Now, on the surface, what would that sound like? If the Amira, someone translates, if the Amira were only to show intent, then I wouldn't care who does the Amira. But if the Amira is part of the Kiddushin, who's got to do the Kiddushin? He does.
So that's the suffix.
And remember, they knew Gemara so well, they didn't have to say what I just said to you for the last 20 minutes. He came into the classroom, he said, Nasan huva amrahi, and immediately everyone is out. Is Amira part of the process of Kiddushin? Then it'd be possible. If Amira is just to show intent, it'd be kasha. Because what difference does it make if he speaks as he speaks? Right? We know what the intent is. Okay? It seems like that's the Gemara's question. I wanted to show you an interesting Mishnah in my life. No, no, we're running out of time a little bit. Mishnah left is a fascinating, view the rosiness. 17th century Turkey. Life in the 17th century in Turkey was really, really legendary. First of all, because it's still 100, 150 years after the Spanish Inquisition, which does happen a long time, people are still recovering. Remember, the Spanish Jews followed three basic routes. One route, they went to Africa and Arabia, and really went to south because they were Sephardim. 90% of the Jews in the 15th century were Sephardim. Most of the people in this room have Sephardic origin. Ashkenazim come from Sephard. Now, how many Jews were in France and Germany and outside of Spain? Spain was the center. Even in Amsterdam, the original people went to Amsterdam were all Sephardic Jews. So, weird problem like that. My last name is Tarragon, and for years and years, everyone said, oh, because you're ancestors were such tzaddikim, they kept tariyak mitzvos, and because they were scribes and they wrote Targum, and all these wonderful stories about how great we were. When I came to Israel 40 years ago, I found like there were thousands of Sephardim in Targum. But you didn't know they existed. What's shot? I did some research. In Spain, there's a port city called Tarragona. It's a very famous port city. And if you know, if you cook a lot, there's a spice called Tarragon spice, which probably was a very popular spice in that port city. Or that port city got the name from the spice because there's a lot of spice there. So a lot of Jews lived there, as they did all over Spain. And some Jews got the name Tarragon, or Tarragon. And unfortunately, in 1492, a lot of them went to, I don't know, Iran, Egypt, Morocco. They fled that way. And my ancestors, they went to Poland and went to Russia. And they never saw each other for the next 500 years. So we became really heavy Ashkenazic, right? They remained Sephardic. So a lot of Jews went south to Sephardic lands, to Arabia and Africa, North Africa, Tunisia, Egypt, Morocco, Iraq. There were tons of Jews there, right? Yes, Sepharis.
How does it work with someone like that? Like, you know that you're Sephardi, but like you still do
Ashkenazi. No, I'm not Sephardi. I'm Sephardi before there was Sephardi. The Shulchan Aruch came, and by the time Shulchan Aruch came, I was already, my ancestors were already living in Ashkenazi world. Or even though, let's say today, someone goes and a woman goes and marries an Ashkenazi, but it's Ashkenazi. Or you move to an Ashkenazi world, you take on Ashkenazi menachem. Today, again, if you live in Brooklyn, you can have it. If you live in Israel, but if you move to this one town, it's only Ashkenazi, you're Sephardi, you take on Sephardi. Remember, those Jews, those days, people lived and stayed. They moved to Iraq. They didn't travel, get a reply. They stayed in Iraq for 20 years, and they went back to wherever they came from. So they took on those customs. Okay, a lot of Jews went north, like namely Spain is a little bit southerly. So they went to England, and they went to Poland, and they went to Germany, and they made their way through. Most Jews went what we call through a Balkan route, where they went down through Italy, Greece, Turkey, and all the Balkan countries around there, Estonia and Bosnia and Slovenia, and that whole right above Greece and Turkey. But Italy and Turkey were the main places they went to, the Jews moving through. So Turkey was a very, very labidic place to be in the 17th century. Rabbi Yehuda Rosenitz, who wrote the Mishnah Melachat Yeshiva, and what else made Turkey really labidic was that, I mean, except for the 17th century? That was ground zero to the biggest controversy that tore apart the Jewish world. 1666, what am I talking about? Shabtai Tzvi. He was in Turkey. And it tore the Turkish rabbinic divide. I mean, that was the, you talk about controversies today, they are nothing. They're walks in the park compared to what happened in 1790. I mean, people were kicked out of shul. People were bullied in the backyard. People were beaten up. People were killed. Because you supported the Shabbat Tzvi, or you didn't support the Shabbat Tzvi, and you run out of town because all the rich people in town did support, and they could hire all the thugs and mafiosos in Turkey to go beat you up or something. So he was a strong, ardent opponent of the Shabbat Tzvi. He signed his name on the cheren that was put out against the Shabbat Tzvi. And once his name was on it, Mishnah Melech. If you were to say from the Rambam, just yesterday I wrote with a couple of Shira Dala guys, people on your brother's share, went through Mishnah Melech, and it was Tumas Tzaras. Like, we're paying Mishnah Melech. Okay. So he talks about this a little bit. But listen, Yosef, what would you want to say?
Is there another way to explain the Suffolk?
Absolutely. It dragged me into the Mishnah Melech. What's the other way to explain the Suffolk? Maybe Amira is not an ikker part of the condition. It's only to show intent. But if she speaks,
makes it worse.
Why is it worse? It's only intent. Because if she's doing the speaking,
then it doesn't count.
Why not?
Because
we don't know what he wants as she's speaking.
Okay, right. Right.
And that's what the Mishnah Melech says. What does the Mishnah Melech say? Follow. Follow along. That if she speaks, but he says, you see the Mishnah Melech? If she speaks, but he goes like this, what does the Mishnah Melech say? It's going to work. Why? Because the only problem with her speaking was not that Amir is part of the Kiddushin and he didn't do it. What's the problem with her speaking? We just don't know if he agrees. He's just probably just not paying attention to her. But if she speaks and he says, let's read the Mishnah Melech together, so Yosef, because he dragged me in. The Kus of HaRamah. Anyone know what the Ramah was?
Yeah.
Or the
yeah.
Very good. How do you know that? Rabbeinu Meir Abu Lafia wrote the Yad Ramah. What's fascinating about him is he was one of the ardent opponents of the Rambam. The first generation, the late 12th century, he wanted to ban the Rambam Gemara Nevuchim for two reasons. One, because he felt the Rambam read a lot of the pieces of Tanakh as Mashalim, and he also felt the Rambam denied Tchiyat HaMitim for various Mashals. He was very, very opposed to the Rambam, and he wrote, the irony is because he was so opposed to the Rambam, he wrote Svarim on all of Shas, and we only have two that remained. So be careful before you ban people's books.
Also, you didn't write anything after Rambam died, right? It was all before.
And we only have two pieces. And what's fascinating about it is the only two Svarim we have is on Sanhedrin and on Baba Basra. Yeah. And the one on Sanhedrin is about this thick. The one on Baba Basra is about this thick. And that's just because it's 176 pages in Baba Basra. And Baba Basra, he just goes to town. Like, he does writing and writing and writing and writing. And on Sanhedrin, he writes a few lines here and a few lines there. And what's also makes him fascinating about Baba Basra is the only Rishon that I know of that doesn't start his parish by quoting Rashi. Rashi was such a paradigm shifter that anyone who lived after Rashi, it's like not give yourself a Zohar. You give a Zohar in the parasha. You start with Rashi, right? The pasuk says so and so. Rashi says, okay, I agree, disagree. There's another view I could say differently. I mean, your baseline is Rashi. How does Tosfos begin? 90% of Tosfos is perish for conscious. V'im tomar, v'yesh lahakshos, v'tamua. It's working off of Rashi. And the other one, talk about the Sugya. Here's what I think about the Sugya. It's really interesting. It's the only sefer like that. So the Mishnah Malach in the 17th century in Turkey quotes Rabbeinu Meir in the 12th, 13th century in Spain. Remember, when you learn Torah, you're like you have wings. You don't care where you live. You're in all the centuries together. The Mishnah Malach is quoting the Ramah, and he says, "V'kol shekein," source number two, "im ana habal hein v'shas nesina." If when the woman speaks, he gives the money. Okay, he has to give the money. The woman says, "I want to marry you," and he goes like this. Here's an emoji. It works. Because Yosef, the only problem with her speaking was not that Amira is part of the Kiddush. Amira's not part of the Kiddush. Amira's just a show intent. But if she speaks, what's the problem?
We don't know.
But if he goes like this, or like this, or there we go. So you see how you, Yosef, the Mishnah Melech, learned to sing exactly like you, not like me. I would have said the ones who say that she can't speak is pasul. I would have said it's because they believe that Amir is part of the Maaseh Kedushin and she can't do it because he has to do it. But then it wouldn't make a difference whether he says yes or not because he didn't do it on Amir. If the problem with Nasnahi was that Amir is part of the Maaseh Kedushin, then what difference does it make if he nods or not? The Mishnah Melech holds like Yosef that the problem with Amrahi is we don't know what he says, but if we know what he says, because he's shaking his head, it's fine. You see how you learn Mumbus? You take a sheet, he's ahead of he view the Sugya. So there are two ways to view the potential problem with the woman doing the Amir. The Gemara is a suffix. Nasan Huva Amrahi, is it good or not? We know why it's good. Who cares? Why is it not good? So one way to learn Yosef is it's not good because Amir is part of the Mumbus tradition. He's not good. The other way to say it's not good is no. Amir is just the ancillary revealer of what they want. You know why she can't speak? Because we just don't know what he wants. What's the nafkamina? Whether Nasan Hu, the Amrahi, the Amar Hu Hain would work.
What if it would be again?
No, because if it doesn't work, you don't need to get.
Need a button, you need again?
No. We don't just give gifts or a button because I can't say, well, absolutely. We try not to give gifts or a button. Can they hear that question? This is called the Chakira. Is Nasan Hu, the Amrahi, when she speaks, problematic because, Amir is part of my situation, she can't do it? Or Amir is just showing what they want, but if he doesn't speak, we don't know. Nafkamina is, what would be the case of Nasan Hu, Amrahi, the Amar Hu Hain? If the problem with Nasan Hu, the Amrahi, is he has to do my situation, his Hain isn't enough. But the problem with Nasan Hu Amra he is, we just don't know what he's thinking, that his Hain would be enough. Isn't that cool? It's kind of train your mind. Train just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. You kind of know how to do it. It's just going to work it and work it and work it. Okay? Now, Yosef, you said before, if the whole role of the Amira is only to show intent, then in theory, what would happen? Not the case where she does the Amira. That's the Gemara's complicated case. But what would happen if we're able to understand their intent, even without an Amira?
It would work.
Right. But if Amira is part of the Maaseh Kiddushin, then would it work? So here's the question. When you're Mekadesh a woman with a shtar, do you need an Amira?
The shtar is an Amira.
No,
need an Amira?
The shtar tells
you. What would you say? Well, if Amira is just, Yosef said, right, if Amira is just to show
intent,
then Shtar works because the Amira says what the intent is. It says the Amira is in the Shtar. But if the Amira is a part of the Maisa Kedushin, you would need to get up, give her the Shtar, and say, Hare Mikudesh is Lee, because that verbal action is part of turning her into a married woman.
What is the Shtar?
No, the Shtar is the Maisa. It's in place of the Kesef, and the Amira is still. It's like you need Amira by Kesef. That's a big question in the Rishon. So now you see what Lam discussed. It glues together different topics. We're now discussing two topics. One topic is, why would there be a problem with a woman doing the Amir? And would it still be a problem if he says yes? That whole Gemara. There's another question, not the woman, forget the woman. What happens? A regular man, the woman's quiet like a mouse, but the man gives a shtar and doesn't say anything. See, those are two separate questions? No, they're not. Same question. What role does a mirror play in Kiddushin? You think they're separate. They're not. Tomorrow, Mirat Hashem, after prepared tonight, I'm going to be giving this complicated shiur on a takanas chafamim, which you're not supposed to use beams for a sukkah. And it's a complicated sugya. We're going to talk about four or five different topics that come up in my two-page, two-plot sugya, and I'm going to show how they all come from one question. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. How to make a takana? How did they make a takana? And that's how our chazal were our Torah. They didn't come in and learn this detail, this detail, this detail. They came in and learned topics, and they knew it so well that the details, everyone knew in the room what concepts and details were touching. Okay? Let's talk about just one more question, okay? Just to show you how far it is. Let's skip to the end, okay? Source number 9. The Gemara gives you a list of languages that would work. So now we're talking about a totally different issue. Not whether she can speak and whether she speaks and he says yes, that whole she-he thing, he says, she says. And not whether you need a mirror for a shtar, the whole separate question. Now we're talking about a third question. The Gemara says, these are the Lashonis that work. I read Ishti, source number 9. I read Arisasi, Yirmai Arusa. I read Kenrioli, Mikudeshis. Those three work. The next three also work. I read Atshali. I read Birshirsi. I read Sekukali, Mikudeshis. Okay, so six languages that work in anyone's book. Mikudeshis, Mureses, Kenrioli, those are the six that work. Yibayiluhu, what about the following? Line 3. If you use the following words. Miuchedesli, you're my Miuchet. Miuedesli, you're Miuret for me. You're like my special one, Miuad. Ezrati, you're my helper. Negdasi, you're my opponent. Atsirasi, you're going to stay in the house with me. Salasi, you're my bone. Hashem took you and made you for my bone. Sigurasi, Tachti, Tefusasi, Lekuchasi. Now, why is the Gemara listing all these charges? The way I should have just said, what happens if you use another language other than these six? Why is the Gemara saying, well, what happens if you don't use the six, but you use A, B, C, D, F, and G? Very good. So Rashi says, excellent. Rashi says that all these nominations would only work because there are words in the Torah. But these words in the Torah are said in the context of women. Marriage, women. Rashi gives a long list. Actually, Rashi's going to his Rebbe, but... So according to Rashi, can you reinterpret it? Something was... slow down. Start from the beginning. Where's Rashi's halacha? Amira, the language has to be... taken from the Torah. For it to work, it has to be a formal word in the Torah. Be careful. Don't commit yourself. It's first defined, then associated. The only way that a language will work is if it's a word that's in the Torah. The Ritva disagrees with Rashi. Let's read the Ritva, then we'll think about it. The Ritva says, Shamina Mehach. It goes in the continuation of the Gemara, which I'm not going to get into now. He reads this Gemara a little differently. He has a proof of it. Anywhere, Shamina Mehach, a source 11. I read a lot of Mishavim. That's how you do it. Line number 2. Shekidushin. Shenemru. Bechol Lashon. Shemashmauso beosa makam Lashon Kidushin. If you use a language which in that in East Brunswick, everyone knows means love or kiddushin, have a kiddushin. Afal pishe and a lashon tar. Even though you're not using a Torah language. The omer lalaz als dalaz, you use a French word to French people. Aravisla, aravim, some Arab word to Arab people. Yivanisli, Yivanim, Greek words to Greek people. So here we have a machlokas. Again, bread and butter of lambdas is machlokas. Two ways to do halacha, two different ways to do them. Rashi says you need a formal language. The Amira is limited only to formal words in the Torah. Oh, it's in the Torah. It sounds like it's wedding, marriage. You can use that word. If it's not in the Torah, forget about it. The Ritva says anything that makes sense that the two parties understand as referring to love, even if it's informal. Arabic, Greek, French, Swahili, Pig Latin, I don't know, whatever you want. Can anyone analyze this machlokas? Why would the Amira have to be formal Torah language? Why can't the Amira be anything colloquially that anyone understands? Let me say.
If the Amira is a Maisha of Kedushin, then it would have to be colloquial. But if it's just for intent, it doesn't work.
It's easy peasy Japanese once you know what you know. If Amira, who I'm looking at, is to create a status in the world, I'm just then has to be something formal that can convey a status in the nation's nation. If the Amira is just showing that we agree and the kesef or the beer, the star is doing the heavy lifting. So I'm just talking now. Let's talk. Roses are red, violets are blue, I love you, and let's get to it. You know, I need whatever I want. Three questions. They all seem different, but they're all the same. What is Amira? Is Amira just showing intent? Amira is a part of the Nice condition. Nafka Mina number one, can she do it? And if not, why can't she do it? Because it's part of the condition, or because we just don't know what the guy's going to say? The Nafka Mina to that would be if he says yes. So it's a Nafka Mina of a Nafka Mina. It's a subterranean Nafka Mina. Rora says, she may not be able to do it. Okay, well, she can do it. Put it this way. If she can do the Amira, what does that show? That Amira is, come on, finish the sentence. It's tough. It's not part of the Maisa Kedushin. If we're gonna conclude she can do the Amira, one thing we know. Amira is not part of the Maisa, right? That's all. But if she can't do it, our options are open. Either because it's part of the Maisa Kedushin, she can't do it, or because it's intent, and we just don't know. Enough for it to be. What if she does? And he says yes. Okay? Second question. Star. What do we all know what's happening? Because the star says it. And she's taking the star. She's greedy. She's literate. Does he have to, as crazy as it sounds, give her a star that says her Amira credentials? And by the way, her Amira credentials, it says it in the star. Yeah, but they make a difference, because the her Amira credentials is not just conveying agreement. Her Amira credentials is a formal, I'm making it to an agency. That's number three. What type of other languages can we use? Does it have to be formalized language? Or can it be any language that's commonly understood? No, I haven't given you the hard stuff. Hard stuff. What about abbreviated languages? What about, that's called yados, yesh yados to confusion, any yados to confusion. Your other questions are, what about tochir dibra? But you start to drill. Once you know what you're looking for, everything becomes colored rather than black and white. Listen, you know, man, if your bearings in a study, this is called language. This is called, like the huge language.
So you say without reading work, shouldn't Amira be tough?
Correct. But it's a machlok is whether midabri mo works, right? And we don't know what midabri mo means yet. So you have to look in the mirror.
Right.
Is it just that they're talking about the hot dogs and the food, or they're talking about the marriage?
Right.
Very good. Correct. Okay, we got to go tomorrow, guys. Okay, good Shabbos. Good Shabbos. Tell me where we're going for Shabbos. Are you for Shabbos?
I'm going to
Kibbe White. Kibbe White? Y'all say where you're going for Shabbos?
I'm all for
Kibbe White. Shalayim?
Home Sephiroth? Home to Jerusalem.
Hey, bro.
You're good. Have a good Shabbos.